sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play.
What's going on, Cubs fans? I am Sean Sears, and you are listening to another episode of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. The Cubs hang on for an 8-7 win Monday night over the Reds after the bullpen almost blows an excellent outing from John Lester, as questions still remain whether or not Craig Kimbrell is the guy to close games. We'll recap the Monday night win in the first segment and then preview Tuesday's matchup with Alec Mills taking the mound for the Cubs, plus an update on the Marlins COVID outbreak situation. Still not great news as we try and sift through whether or not baseball can continue to play. Today's episode is brought to you in partnership with CubsInsider.com. Head to Cubs Insider to read about why David Ross feels safe about playing games in Cincinnati. All that and more on CubsInsider.com, official partner of Locked On Cubs. You can get Locked On Cubs on whatever podcast app you use, and make sure when you get into your car, you tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Cubs. And then make sure you follow us on Twitter at Locked On Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. So here in this first segment, as I mentioned, the Cubs win 8-7. And this was a very strange game because the Cubs jumped out to an early lead right from the get-go. After two innings, they were up 6-0. They tacked on two more runs throughout this game to give themselves 8 runs, which was great, but John Lester had a no-hitter through 5 innings, and then the bullpen came in and allowed 6 hits, 8 walks, 7 runs, and it took Jeremy Jeffers coming in with the bases loaded to save the game with the final out. So let's take a look at how this all shook out. So first off, John Lester, fantastic. 5 innings, no hits, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. He did throw 76 pitches. It did seem like Lester was still on a pitch count at this moment. They know, at least now, Lester's pitching with, I think, the idea that he's not going to be going much further than 5 or 6 innings. So he's using a lot of his bullets now instead of reserving some of those for later on, which was a good approach. He was great against the Reds. He wasn't necessarily stifling, but they just couldn't get much contact off of him or any real contact. So, Lester goes 5 solid innings, no hits. Wade Miley, on the other hand, an inning and 2/3, 4 hits, 6 runs, 5 of them earned, 2 walks and 3 strikeouts. He lasted just 57 pitches through 2 innings. He was taken out for Treja Antone, who settled down a little bit, allowed just 1 run on 1 hit with a walk and 5 strikeouts, saving the Reds here in this moment. Then Brooks Raley and Lucas Sims combined for just 3 hits, 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts to finish out this game for the pitching side for Cincinnati. In terms of scoring, though, the Cubs, like I said, jumped out early. Chris Bryant started the game by getting hit by a pitch. Anthony Rizzo then walked, and then a flyout from Javi and a lineout from Schwarber ended up with Contreras with 2 outs. He's able to hit not a line drive, but a nice double into left field on a ground ball. Bryant scores on the play. Rizzo stays at third. And then Steven Souza on a 3-2 count clubs a double down the left field side right over Eugenio Suarez's head at third base. It flies down the left field line. Rizzo scores, and so does Contreras. The Cubs take a 3-0 lead. And then David Bote coming into the game, a 2-2 count, does a great job of just going the other way, shooting a single through the right field side, ground ball. Souza scores. The Cubs end that inning up 4-0. John Lester goes 1-2-3, kind of walking Eugenio Suarez, his only walk of that inning or that game, holding the Reds to no runs. And the Cubs come back again to the top of the second. Javier Baez hits a double down the left field side. Bryant scores, who once again got on base with a walk. Rizzo moves to third, and then Schwarber up to plate on a pass ball. Rizzo scores on the play. Baez moves up to third. The Cubs get 2 runs and are up 6-0. It stays that way until the top of the sixth when Anthony Rizzo hits a home run off of Trajan Tone, his third home run in four games now. Rizzo is one of the leaders in offensive categories right now for the league, despite, you know, obviously four games in, not going to put too much stock into, but Rizzo's hitting the ball well. Lester then would leave this game, and Dan Winkler would come in. He would walk Joey Votto and then Eugenio Suarez before striking out Nick Castellanos and then replaced by Rowan Wick, who allowed a single to Jesse Winkler. Up through the middle of the field, Votto scored, Suarez to second. The Reds get a run back, but Cubs still up 7-1. David Bodie in the top of the seventh is able to hit a double into center field. Line drive, Contreras scores after he got on with a single. At the beginning of that inning, the Cubs extend their lead to 8-1. And this is where things get a little interesting. Bottom of the seventh, Dwayne Underwood comes in and allows a home run to rookie Tyler Stevenson, who just absolutely crushed the ball to deep center field. And then later that inning, Castellanos singled into center field, scoring Joey Votto, who was able to get on with a single. And then Eugenio Suarez moves up to second after walking before Castellanos. The Reds get two runs back, Cubs still up 8-3. Bottom of the eighth, Joey Votto hits a single into right field that scores Stevenson and Phil Irvin. The Reds now down 8-5. And then the bottom of the ninth. This is where things get kind of crazy. Craig Kimbrel comes in to replace James Norwood. He walks Nick Castellanos, throws a wild pitch, which then allows Castellanos to move up to second. Winkler ground out, unassisted to first, but Castellanos moves to third. Joss Van Meter works a walk, and then Shogo Akiyama comes in to pinch hit for Kyle Farmer. Van Meter steals second, and then Shogo Akiyama walks. So with the bases loaded, Freddie Galvis hit by a pitch, a run comes in. Castellanos scores. The Cubs now only up 8-6. And then Tyler Stevenson works a walk, moving everyone up a run. Van Meter scores. The Cubs now only up 8-7. And Craig Kimbrel comes out. Jeremy Jeffers comes in having to get two outs. He's able to strike out Phil Irvin. And then Joey Votto comes in and immediately two-strike approach, was choking up on the bat. He knew he just was going to try and poke a ball through. He got good contact on one ball that drifted off just foul on the left field side and then nails a line drive to center field. Albert Almora there to catch the ball. The Cubs escape. But as I mentioned at the top of this, despite Jeffers getting the save here in an 8-7 win, the Cubs obviously were up by a lot and blew this after John Lester left this game. The bullpen is a concern. Ryan Tapira, Dwayne Underwood, Rowan Wick, Dan Winkler. None of these guys looked very impressive. James Norwood's continuing to struggle. And then Craig Kimbrel. I think Gordon Whitmire from NBC Sports pointed out, you know, since Kimbrel has come over, it's been hard to feel comfortable or confident in the Cubs' closing position, even with a guy like a Hall of Fame closer in Craig Kimbrel, who's just been so iffy. David Ross talked about it after this game, saying he was trying to give some of these relievers more of a leash because they've only played now, obviously, four real games, seven games total in terms of the three scrimmage games they played prior to the season starting. They still need to get some of the rust off. And that's kind of what he said about Kimbrel, saying, you know, I'm not trying to make excuses for anybody, but we've got to give a little bit of a leash. This is a really unique situation we're dealing with. Kimbrel was likely just knocking off rust is what Ross kind of explained it as. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. Kimbrel has not really done anything super impressive. It felt like he was working with a lot of his off-speed pitches. His curveball looked okay, but it just felt like the Reds just saw that coming. I think he threw it 14 times last night, and they didn't swing once. On top of that, Ross did say he liked Kimbrel's fastball, and it looked very strong and electric. He just couldn't get it in the zone. So hopefully this is just kind of Kimbrel working himself back into a rhythm, but if that's the case, he's been working himself back into a rhythm since June of last year. So Jeffers looked okay, but he also struggled to throw some strikes as well. Obviously a tough situation. You can't really put a ball anywhere because it's the game. So you do have to, you know, locate low half of the strike zone. He did throw a couple challenge pitches. The strikeout he got on Phil Irvin was a two-seamer that cut across and high. It looked like Irvin thought it was going to stay high in the zone, and it tailed back in towards his bat, being a right-handed hitter. Swung and missed, and then Joey Votto, obviously, he was able to induce that line out to Almora. But, you know, these guys need to start throwing strikes. Eight walks in the night, six hits from the relievers after John Lester gives you five great innings. That would have been tough to lose. And even still, this bullpen doesn't really create much confidence, despite us seeing, I mean, I was commending them a little bit. They did pitch well, especially after that Sunday game, obviously a big lead. The offense is looking a lot better. Obviously, coming back and scoring 9 and 8 runs in their last two games is very good, especially because they could only scrape across 3 runs in that Saturday game against the Brewers. So there's things to take away from this. Lester looks strong. He's looked strong so far. If he's going to be a 5-6 inning guy and then out, that's great. But the Cubs are going to have to find a solution to get whoever bridges between that starter and hopefully their closer. So things they have to shake out, but overall, a good win. It's just frustrating. The Cubs were up 7-0 at one point and almost lost this game. But they pulled it out on top, and that's what matters here. So we'll take a look at the Tuesday night matchup, which features Alec Mills and Tyler Mahle on the mound for the Reds here in just a moment here, as well as touching on some of the updates from the Marlins, who have reportedly had more players test positive for COVID. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with an inflammation-fighting compound like Arkana and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code LOCKEDONMLB at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code LOCKEDONMLB for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. All right, here in the second segment, as I mentioned here, Cubs face the Reds. Tuesday at 5:40 Central Time, it is Alec Mills versus Tyler Mahle. Mahle's getting the start in place of Anthony Discalfani, who's on the IL at the moment right now. Mahle, a top prospect for the Reds, hasn't had necessarily a great, showing as a starter. He had impressive numbers in limited innings in 2017. Just 20 innings, but a 2.70 ERA with 14 strikeouts. The walks were still a concern, though, with 11 walks. He's figured that out a little bit in 2018 and 19, but the ERA has kind of skyrocketed a little bit as well, allowing more hits as the innings increase. He's a guy that, you know, he can strike you out. He does have some high velocity, but he's very much not a guy that's fooled the Cubs here, at least in two starts. In 2019, he did get a no decision in his last start. 6 innings, 1 hit, 1 earned run. But in the start before that, in May, 9 hits, 6 runs, a no decision in 5 innings. It's all going to depend on the walks. If Mally's going to walk more guys, he's going to have a tough time locating. The Cubs can hopefully pick him apart and maybe pick some pitches to drive out of Great American Ballpark. In terms of Alec Mills, obviously 2019 is strong, showing only 36 innings, coming mainly in relief and, you know, interim positions, but did get a couple starts. His last game against Cincinnati in 2019 came in July. 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, a no decision on 6 strikeouts and just 1 walk. Alec Mills, a guy that does have similar makeup to Kyle Hendricks maybe, but isn't necessarily the same type of pitcher, I wouldn't say. He does have some good breaking stuff. He's got a really nice changeup that he pairs well with his fastball two-seam. A lot of movement on his pitches, but he's not necessarily a strikeout guy. The plan is likely to get Mills through 5-6 innings like they did with Lester and hope the bullpen can maybe make up for yesterday's poor showing. So, Kyle Hendricks, though, named NL Player of the Week after his impressive opening day start last Friday. Going, of course, the complete game shutout against the Brewers. He wins NL Player of the Week. Very nice to see. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Bleacher Nation shared a tweet showing from Fangraphs some of the early offensive leaderboards in the NL featuring 13 Cubs. 2 Cubs in the top 13, both being Rizzo and Wilson Contreras right now. So that's nice to see. Obviously, 4 games in, it doesn't mean a ton. But it's nice to see the Cubs are hitting and driving balls. Excuse me. But then the big news here, the Marlins, as Ken Rosenthal reported today, had 4 more players test positive for COVID. And I'm just not sure what's going on here. Baseball, I think, is trying to make this seem like it's a one-off situation. But we're 4 days in, and this happened. So, You know, it's hard to say this is definitely a one-off situation, especially when you're talking about now 15 personnel, people that travel with the Marlins now sitting here with COVID. They're going to try and basically do some scheduling Jenga, which was the perfect way to describe here by Rob Arthur on Twitter today. They're going to basically have the Yankees and Orioles, I think, face each other today and tomorrow, and then they'll reschedule some matchups with the Phillies and Marlins later on. That fixes the scheduling issue, but doesn't really resolve the issue at hand here, which is that the Marlins have a good amount of players now testing positive for COVID. It's clearly an outbreak at this point. I'm not sure what they're planning on trying to do. They haven't necessarily addressed this. I know Rob Manfred did talk to late Monday night, I think, on the MLB Network. Obviously, the Marlins won't be playing Tuesday in Miami, and there's a possibility of playing Wednesday, depending on test results. That just seems like a dumb idea. I just don't get it. It's just a stupid plan. It's a very dumb idea. I don't get why they think this is something you need to do. I mean, at minimum, one of the medical experts from Ken Rosenthal's article we talked about yesterday, Dr. Binney, who is with, I believe it's Emory's Oxford College, talked about, you know, this at minimum, you should have shut down games for at least 5 days, or at least for this team in particular, because it's so hard to figure out who's shot showing, who's asymptomatic but has the virus. It's just so frustrating. I just don't get why. I mean, if this happens again, I think you have to seriously consider shutting down this season. And it only happened less than a week into the season. So it's hard to justify anything other than, yeah, maybe we should wait, you know, pause game, see what happens. But because the schedule realistically only allows for 7 days to basically as buffer before the end of the season, you know, baseball's being pretty hard-headed here because they don't want to deal with having to rearrange their postseason because they're guaranteed money for those post games and they don't want to move TV broadcast dates is really what's likely the issue here. So I hope that player safety is something these guys are concerned about. I'm sure it is to some extent, but right now it does not feel like it's the priority. It feels like the priority is to keep baseball going because it's only the Marlins and not everyone else. And, you know, the Marlins will figure this out as a one-off, and that's not what this seems like at the moment. So I'm cautiously optimistic. Now, Ian Happ did say that communication is really what's going to have to make a big difference here. He was talking about, as the player rep saying to the media yesterday for the Cubs, saying that they've been in constant communication with the Reds, that they had their tests and results and knew who was sick, who wasn't feeling sick, who was not part of this roster before the games even started. And that kind of gives these guys a moment to just kind of breathe because they're not totally worried about the issue. But Happ saying, you know, as far as the clubhouse, as far as our situation, we obviously feel safe because we've done a good job going through everything and going through all the protocols. You know, the Cubs themselves are taking this relatively serious, and you can see the players are kind of following suit with that. So it's nice to see Ian Happ, the player rep for the Cubs, you know, kind of reassuring everyone that the Cubs are taking this seriously and they are taking precautions to communicate with the Reds and opponents before they travel. I don't know why that wasn't something that was set in the protocols to begin with, but it's nice they're taking this extra step. It's been great to have baseball. I would hate for it to be ruined because baseball couldn't handle their first blip correctly, but that's what we're kind of dealing with here at the moment. So, but that will do it here for today's episode of Lockdown Cubs. Remember to get this show every day. You need to subscribe to Lockdown Cubs or whatever podcast app you use, whether that's Google, Spotify, Apple, TuneIn app, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen to your podcast, make sure you subscribe. Leave a 5-star review. And then make sure you check out the latest episode of Lockdown Fantasy Baseball after this episode. Tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Lockdown Fantasy Baseball at the episode of Lockdown Cubs. And then you can follow us on Twitter at Lockdown Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. Thanks for tuning in to your guys' daily Cubs podcast. Enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy baseball while we can. And as always, go Cubs.